Chris Gibson is here with us. He's the congressman from New York's 19th district. He is a guy who has eschewed staying in office for the rest of his life as a congressman. Said when he came he was going to do 8 years and has stuck to his word, which nobody expected him to do. Are you sorry?
Well, you know, I said from the very beginning, from the time I retired from the Army and first sought office in the Congress, I believe in term limits. Why is that? Because I believe in us and the American people being self-governing. And, you know, to me, if you have a permanent political class, you know, in real terms, how is that substantively different from what we had before we established a republic? I mean, the whole idea is that we would have people represent us for a period of time and then come back. So I felt the need. Of course, I support that legislation in the Congress, but you can imagine how popular that is. I think I was one of like 10 that co-sponsored that legislation.
You actually found 10?
Yeah, wow. We did out of, what, 435 or so. You know, but I have self-imposed that. Now, I did say the most I would serve is 4 tours or 8 years. And I could have elected to serve one final tour, or at least put myself on a ballot to stand for election. But I've elected not to do that. So I will complete my tour, my time in the U.S. House at the end of 6 years. And that's because, as we talked about a little bit in the last session, I am considering very seriously running for governor in New York State. And given how much respect I have for that challenge, if I decide to do that, I would need a full 2 years to really mount a formidable campaign.
Well, let's stay with that for a second, if we can. We recently spoke to Ed Cox on this program. Are you satisfied that you're getting from the entrenched Republican machine what you should be getting in terms of support? Because we know that Rob Astorino, who lost pretty dramatically to Andrew Cuomo the last time, wants to run again. And it's my sense that some of the entrenched guys want to let him do that. Are you feeling that you're getting a fair break?
Well, I need to earn it. Look, I mean, I have to be able to go out and make a case. You know, if we decide to do this, I have to be able to earn the support from every quarter, by the way, not only enrolled Republicans, but again, as we talked about this challenge, I mean, I have to be able to attract support across the political spectrum. Now, I believe my track record proves that, you know, when you consider the fact that you look at the last campaign, 2014, you know, I was one of three Republicans in the United States of America that was serving in what the handicappers in Washington describe as a Democratic seat. This was a congressional seat that President Obama had carried twice. 2012, he carried it by well over 6 points. We were able to win in that environment, even though this last time I was outspent over 2-1 in that composition of a congressional seat. We won by 30 percentage points. So, look,
that's huge, by the way.
Well,
I'm not pointing it out to you, but pointing it out to our listeners.
So I think that, you know, we're in a position where we've shown an ability to attract support from across the political spectrum in ideas and concepts that help a flourishing economy, that make good choices for current and future generations and protect this exceptional way of life, and work constituent-driven issues. I think that's really important because, you know, Alan, at the end of the day, among my goals as I, you know, retired from the Army was to help revitalize faith in our ability to be self-governing. So that leading by example is so important on that score. That's why, you know, when I said I would term limit myself, I'm following through on what I said. You know, I didn't think it was right that in tough times that my wife and I would be double dipping. And that's why we made a conscious choice.
You didn't take the pension.
Our military pension, which we earned, we write back to the taxpayer, to the U.S. Treasury, again, to lead by example. And then in our legislation, you will find that our ideas for our authored bills come from our people. This idea that we can still do this. We can be a self-governing people. And I think this is an idea juxtaposed to the corruption that you see in Albany. I believe that we can absolutely clean up our state. We can turn it into once empire state can be revitalized. So to answer your question, I think I have to go out and earn that. And I believe that, look, so far in the last 6 months, I've been in now well over half the counties in the state, almost 2/3. And we've received a very strong support. And I believe that if we do go forward, I think that we'll be in a position where we'll have a united party behind us.
You have a very interesting distinction. The Lugar Center ranks you as the number one in Congress in bipartisanship. Now, there'll be somebody out there who will say, oh, that's because he's got a lot of Democrats in his district. He has to satisfy them. Is that the reason?
No, actually, I view this as a validation of my approach to governance. You know, I have a deep respect for what the founders did. We set up a form of government that in the absence of consensus, we keep the status quo. They did that on purpose to protect our liberty. But if you believe, as I do, that the current status quo is unacceptable, then in an era of divided government, by constitutional stipulation, you're going to work together. Because if you don't work together, you keep the status quo. And who wants that? So, you know, I found it very gratifying and validating that the Lugar Center, based on their own methodology, you know, that they racked and stacked.
Lugar, of course, is a Republican.
Well, he is. But, you know, that methodology stands up.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
he measured empirically how much support any member got from the other party and from their own party. And they looked at the balance of that with regard to bills that they had authored and bills that the members had supported of other members. And when they did this methodology and then they ran the numbers, you know, I came out number one out of 435. So, you know, given my view of the Constitution and what we need to do to bring about change, I viewed this as very validating. And by the way, it shows up in the effectiveness. I'm having actually, thanks be to God, I mean, my most effective session to date as a legislator, co-authored a couple bills the President of the United States has already signed on suicide awareness and prevention and helping vets start businesses. I was part author of this H.R. 6, this 21st Century Cures Bill, which I believe is really good news for people suffering from cancers and heart disease and those on the spectrum and Alzheimer's and, you know, those suffering from chronic Lyme disease. That's the part of the bill we drafted. It was the bill that passed in the last Congress that didn't get through the Senate. We then looked at the strategy and said, how can we get this to the president's desk? And we've included it in this larger bill that passed overwhelmingly in the U.S. House, 344-77. This bill adds nearly $9 billion of new investments for medical research. Really important to helping people out there. The president has issued a statement of support for H.R. 6. We want to work with the Senate now, and hopefully we'll get the president's signature sometime later this year, early next. So I think, you know, that, along with some bills I'm working with Senator Gillibrand on, helping with Agent Orange, we've got some bills that deal with the issue of debt, of student loan debt, and making college more accessible. So, you know, these constituent-driven pieces of legislation, some of which we've already gotten the president's signature, others of which we're in a strong position, I think validates this idea that you have to work together to get anything meaningful done for your people.
I got a minute and 38 seconds. I know you've got a bill out there providing loan forgiveness for young farmers. Can you do it in a minute and 38?
Yeah, it's a very serious bill. I want to say this. It's not a giveaway. I worked with the farmers on this. You know, the issue is this, that we need 100,000 new farmers in the next decade, or we're going to end up having to import more food or potentially see more consolidation of farms. That's not what we want to do. We want to support family farms. When we interviewed those that are interested in the calling of farming, what we found is that 30% who are interested in becoming new farmers actually don't do so because of student loan debt. So what this bill does is that it requires new farmers, these beginning farmers, that they had to have been working as a farmer for 10 years, paying back their loan every single month for 10 years, and at the end of 10 years, they would get loan forgiveness for the balance. There's already a law now that helps with doctors and nurses and teachers. This would then expand that definition. So it's a realistic bill, I think, that addresses a fundamental need we have. If we want to be a truly independent nation, we need to be growing our own food, and I hope producing and consuming locally. And so to do that, we need to have this kind of support. This is constituent driven. This is, you know, Lindsay Shute from the Claremont area, and she is a leader in the Young Farmers, National Young Farmers. And she brought this idea forward. We worked together with legal counsel to fashion this bill, and it's got good bipartisan support. Joe Courtney, who's on your program occasionally, we're the co-authors of this bill.
It's always great to talk to Congressman Chris Gibson. Chris, we appreciate your coming by and being with us, and it's great to have you here. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Alan. Best wishes to all the listeners out there.